Good morning. I want to welcome each of you to Hill Country Bible Church. For those of you who are joining us at Steiner Ranch in Brushy Creek, we welcome you also. And we're so excited that the election is almost here and it's almost over, right? Yeah, a few people are happy about that. How many of you have already voted? Like, you got that done. See, for those of you who haven't voted yet, you still have to think about it. Like, the rest of us are okay, right? We've got that taken care of. And so in the midst of all of this, we've been doing a sermon series called In God We Trust, and we've been tackling not the personalities or the politics of the people involved in this election, but what are the cultural issues that we face as a group of people? And is there anything that the Bible says that would inform us or enlighten us on how we should live and how we should make an impact in our culture? Now, this summer, when the tragedy in Dallas took place, where those officers were killed in a racially motivated shooting, everybody was making statements. And if you'll recall, those of you who were here, I said, I do not feel comfortable making a spur-of-the-moment statement until I've had time to pray and really process and interact with some people, but we will discuss this topic, race and law enforcement. So today I'm keeping this promise that we are going to be talking about this today, as we really begin to wrestle with one of the prevailing issues that we have as a nation that we need to work through and deal with in an appropriate way. So I really believe that there was this feeling of hope that went across the country as a whole. The idea that the generational sins of slavery and of segregation had breathed their last breath when President Barack Obama was elected to office, the first black man to hold the highest office in the land. And I'll just be honest with you, even though there are some political things and some policy things that he and I might differ on, when he was sworn in, there was a feeling of pride that kind of rose up in me to think, maybe we finally have gotten to the place where nobody looks at color as an issue in who can be where in our country. And I think many people shared that same feeling, but it didn't last. When Trayvon Martin, an unarmed black youth, was killed by George Zimmerman, and then George Zimmerman was acquitted, there was a feeling that just kind of went across our country of, whoa, maybe this issue is not settled. Now, I want to stop right now in this moment, and I want to ask for your help because it's critically important that I get your help right in this moment, okay? So when I brought up the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman case, when I brought that up, what was in your mind when I brought that up? What you immediately started to go to? And you know what it is, right? Because your mind started to go to there. What you started to go to will make a difference in whether this conversation today is profitable for you or not. So what I'm going to ask you not to do is spend the next 30 minutes thinking from the standpoint of the politics of racism in the United States. You say, well, what are the politics of racism? The politics of racism are looking at the legal system, looking at statistics, looking at poverty rates, looking at Second Amendment rights, all the things in your mind that you start working through to justify or to excuse or blame or all that stuff. That's the politics of racism. Let the politicians have that for a moment. What I want you to do is look at the people. Who are the people that are being affected in our country? What does it feel like in the United States to be part of the minority culture? And maybe even a bigger question is, why would you feel that way? The land of the free, the home of the brave, why would you feel that way? It's a really important question to ask. And then the further question is, what does Jesus want us to do? Like, what does the Bible say about all this? So that's what we're going to be looking at today. And if you free your mind from trying to work through the politics of this, and you begin to look at the people involved, I think today could be a life-changing experience for you. So, after the shooting, And the acquittal of George Zimmerman, the hashtag Black Lives Matter was put out there, and it began to actually become a grassroots movement. I mean, people started getting on with it, and it started to grow, and people were using it. And since that time, it's kind of morphed into a political movement, and it's taken on a life of its own. But after that, we saw a series of things, a series of videos where we saw unarmed black men in confrontations with law enforcement that was captured on video. And in many cases, those things resulted in the death of that black man. And people began to go, something's got to be done. So as they took to the streets, oftentimes those situations got out of control, and we started seeing riots, like in Ferguson and in Baltimore and Charlotte. And then the unthinkable happened. We saw policemen being targeted as a pushback on the racial tension in our country, resulting in the 5 officers slain in Dallas and 9 other people who were wounded in a very racially motivated situation. And then the hashtag Blue Lives Matter then became the hashtag that was going around. And so all of a sudden now we've got these two things. Are you for the Black Lives Matter people? Are you for the Blue Lives Matter people? And it's almost as if you can't be for both, because somehow They're different than each other, and we begin to realize that there is racism still in our country. There's a feeling, a sense, that something hasn't yet been righted. It hasn't yet been fixed. And so, like, what do we do with that? Now, I started talking to my friends and trying to find out where they were coming from on this. And so here was a conversation I had with Pastor Joseph Parker, pastor of David Chapel here in Austin. We were sitting down over lunch one day, and we were chatting about this whole issue. And he says to me, he says, well, Tim, he says, here's one of the things that you probably have never experienced. You probably have never been walking through a Nordstrom's with your wife and realized that there's somebody kind of following you along and kind of come to understand, oh, security is following me. Now, when I shared that with my son says, I know what that feels like. And I said, yeah, because you're a punk kid. But here we have a 60-ish-year-old attorney pastor with his wife who can afford to buy anything and everything in that store, walking through being trailed by security. I've never felt that. I've never seen that. And then one of my other friends, Aaron Smith, is posting regularly on his Facebook page saying that if you're a black man and you get pulled over, you have to have your hands on the steering wheel the whole time, grab the 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock position, and say, yes, sir. I've never taught my kids to do that. I've never taught my kids to do that. Why is it that there could be a group of people in our country that just have a very different experience than another group of people in our country? And that raises this issue that we're going to be talking about today. So with that as a backdrop, I want to start out and dive into just a couple things to frame up the conversation. The first thing I want to do is talk about the fallacy of racism, the fallacy of race, the fallacy of race, not racism, but race. The question is, are people really all that different? Are people really all that different? And let's start with genetics. People have a tendency to think, well, like, there must be certain types of people that are of certain types of quality and others that are a different quality. Maybe mine's better than yours, and that's what separates us all, as if we're different species of people. But in a study of kind of the DNA genetic code that makes up all the humans on the planet, we share 99.9% of the same similar characteristics. And the thing that makes us slightly different, that gives a little variety to this world, that makes your hair color different, makes your skin color different, makes you short, makes you tall, gives you a genetic predisposition to collect plaque in your arteries or not, 0.1%. 0.1%, which validates what the Bible says when Paul, speaking in Acts 17:26, says, from one man, he made every nation of men. In other words, from one common ancestor, from one strand of DNA, he made us all. We all come from the same roots. that they should inhabit the whole earth, and he determined the time set for them and the exact places where they should live. So even though we might live, our people might come from different continents and different places, and we may share some genetic similarities to a group of people that are different than each other, we still all come from the same source. In fact, the King James translators translated the word man there as one blood. We all come from one blood. We're all the same. So the color of our skin does not make us different qualities or types of people. Racism or race is not a genetic differentiator. In other words, a blonde-haired, blue-eyed person from Scandinavia and an olive-skinned, brown-haired, brown-eyed person from Spain, and a dark-skinned, dark-eyed, dark-haired person from Somalia have more in common than you could ever imagine. The differences are so slight, so slight. In a world where we're actually coming together and people are marrying, I think 30, 40 years from now, like, we won't even be having this discussion. Like, nobody will even think about it, because everybody will commingle in such a way that we're going to have all kinds of beautiful people like we do today. So the second question on the fallacy of race is race a historic issue? And surprisingly, it's not. It's only been in the last couple hundred years that people have actually identified race to separate people out. Now, there have been separations. The Greeks separated out. It was the civilized and the barbarians. They didn't see colors of skin. Either you're kind of one of us, you're civilized, or you're one of them, the barbarians, and that covered everybody. The Jews did the same thing. There were the Jews and the Gentiles. In other words, they didn't divide the world up into different colors. They basically divided the world up into us and them, into us and them, which actually brings me to what I think is really important for you to get. What we often determine as racial differences are really not about the skin. It's about shared history. In other words, what's the story of my people, where we came from? Shared experiences, shared values, shared preferences. Those are the things that really make up the differences between different groups of people. It's not their race, it's their shared history. In other words, it's not color, it's culture and the culture of a group. Now, here's where racism comes from. Racism comes from a group who has a fear of another culture. Maybe it's a fear of oppression. Maybe it's a fear of taking away privileges. Maybe it's something, but there's some kind of a fear of another group, and then there's the stigmatization. Well, because we're afraid of them, they must be bad. And that's where racism comes from. That's kind of how it goes down, and that's kind of how it forms. Now, in our culture today, we predominantly, to oversimplify, can divide our culture up into two groups of people. One would be the majority culture. The majority culture. The others would be the minority cultures. The minority cultures can embrace a fear of oppression because there's been a history of oppression. And so that makes them fearful of the majority culture. On the other hand, the majority culture has always experienced opportunity. We are the land of the free, the home of the brave. We have opportunity. Your dream can come true. Everything can come true if you want it to come true. That's what's called the culture of privilege, that feeling that I've got privilege. And in the midst of all that, the lightning rod in our culture right now happens to be law enforcement. So in connection with law enforcement, you've got the minority culture. Their fear is, are we going backwards, or have we never actually progressed? And oppression's coming back. For the majority culture, the fear is, am I going to lose my peace and safety? That my life will be good and charmed, and I'll be able to experience everything I want? And in the middle of that, we have our tension right now. So what do we do about that? I have absolutely no idea. So I reached out to somebody who does, somebody who's an expert in all of these issues. I just want you guys to know that we are blessed in Central Texas to have incredible leaders of our law enforcement community. Incredible leaders. And I could have... We could have invited Chief Acevedo, we could have invited Chief Mannix, we could have invited a bunch of people, but we just picked the best one, okay? Is this getting videotaped? Is this going out? Maybe, I may be arrested tomorrow. We just picked the best one. My friend Alan Banks is the Chief of Police of Round Rock. He's been in the community a few years now. A stellar individual. I could go through all of his accomplishments, kind of starting at the bottom in law enforcement and then just working his way up through. So I could give you a lot, but I actually want you to be able to hear more from him than from me. Let me just say this. I believe Chief Banks has the same spirit on him that Daniel the prophet did, who was a man that everybody saw something in him that separated him from other people, the Spirit of God. And because of that, he's been prospering in his career, and he's looked to with the esteem of a man who really understands the issues. And so we're just so excited to have him here today. So Alan, come on up and join us. Thank you, brother.
So those who didn't stand, those are the ones I gave tickets to, or not? thank you for having me. Thank you, Pastor.
You're welcome. So Al and I have met. We've talked a couple times, and we sat down this week, and I just put some questions out in front of him. I said, I'm going to ask these questions, and tell us what you think. So we're going to dive into those, and I think you're going to be incredibly enlightened. So the first question I just want to start with is, what does racism feel like?
So good question about what does racism feel like. I kind of say I have three strikes against me, but really it's three blessings in regards to my life. First and foremost, if you haven't noticed, I am a black man. That's number one. Number two is I wear this uniform. And number three is, I can say it's my wife. She is a blessing, but the fact that I married 21 years ago this November to a white woman. But I do want to introduce my wife, Tammy, who's with me here today. Tammy, can you stand, please? So, you know, dealing with a interracial marriage for 21 years is something that you know, you get the people who don't believe in interracial marriage or who has that concept and that's wrong. You know, we've had to deal with that. And I tell you what, you know, she is, I said earlier, she is the true chief of this family. It's not me, it's her. So so that's an issue. The second that I talked about was being in this uniform. And there's that hatred for the uniform. People don't see the man inside that uniform. All they see is this uniform. And that's a hatred that people are not born with. That is taught, and I can tell you any prejudice, racism, bias is not, you're not born to that, you're born into it. And I'll give you an example, and I'll put y'all on the spot. How many of you who have children had ever said, if you don't stop behaving, that policeman's going to take you to jail? Exactly.
Yeah.
Or how many of you have been driving down the street, and a policeman gets behind you, and all of a sudden you're like, Well, your children see that. Well, what's wrong? I got to behave. Make sure your seatbelts on. That policeman's going to get you. Those are taught behaviors. You know, how many white kids have been born and come out of the womb saying the N-word? Not a one. Those are taught behaviors. And then being a black man, I've had to go through those issues at my younger. Now, I was not born in Texas, and it was not. I'm not from Round Rock. I've been blessed to be here 3 years to an amazing community of Round Rock and in the Central Texas area. We love it. We absolutely love it here. I was born in New Mexico, a small city, big city in Albuquerque. and going through some of the issues that I went through as a black male youth, and then coming into this profession, I've had to deal with some of those issues. I've gone to the car dealerships where a salesman would not come up to me, but a white man would come up, and all of a sudden you got three salesmen around him. And I guarantee you, I probably had more money than that person did. You know, my business goes elsewhere. But I'm not put on this earth here to judge or to hate. I'm here to make that difference. And those are the issues that I work through and work my family through to make sure that I'm doing the things that are right and to make sure that, you know, I honor God. And as long as I'm doing that, I make that difference.
Mm-hmm. So good. So tell me what went through your head when you were going to meet your wife's parents.
Wow. You know, my wife and I have talked about this in length as when we first started. First and foremost, we actually met in church, and I think that's important. It was very important to us because we did enter into an interracial when we dated, obviously. But going to her parents, and you think about a middle-class family, white family, and the thoughts of a father and a mother who think that their daughter is going to marry a white man and have grandkids and go forward, I shocked their world. But the thing is that they believed and they trust that God put me in her life for a reason. And the wonderful part about it is that her parents now love me more than they actually love her. So, but it's scary. It really is. But it's me proving myself. And we talk about in God we trust. And that's one of that. I had to trust God to bring us through what we had to as a couple. You know, even to this day, you know, we might go into some places and people might give us, you know, give us that eye. But you know what? It doesn't matter because we're making that difference not only in our lives, our lives of our kids, but I think the lives of our community because God put us together for a reason.
So good. So law enforcement. Why would you go into law enforcement?
Yeah, I should ask myself that question 25 years ago. No. And I'll tell you, I knew from the third grade that I wanted to be in law enforcement.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I had an influence in my life at that time. And we talk about we trust God. And God, this is a calling for me. This isn't something that I just, you know, thought I'd get a paycheck day to day. God put someone in my life in the third grade, and I knew from there this is where I wanted to be. And you know, the hard part of this was taking my mom and my grandmother, or going to them and telling them, you know what, I'm gonna go into law as a profession. Well, she thought I was going to be a lawyer. So I kept that going until the day I told them that, you know, I wanted to be a policeman. So
that's good.
So
all the young people are listening right now.
I didn't lie. Yeah. I didn't
you
lie.
You didn't lie. That's right. So,
you know, The biggest thing about that was, and I was pretty smart. I prayed about it before I went and told my mom and grandmother. I had a full scholarship to the University of New Mexico, an academic scholarship. So about 3.5 years in is when the opportunity for me to become a policeman came up. And again, I said, this is a calling. God wanted me to be there and doors open for a reason, and he was directing me. Well, I had to go tell my mom and my grandmother, who kept me grounded and kept me in church my whole life. I had to tell them that I'm going to drop out of school, give up my scholarship, and become a police officer. And so after praying about it, God says, you're going to take them to a public restaurant so they can't kill you. And if they do, there'll be witnesses. So, but after explaining to them, this was my calling. You know, they both understood. My grandmother's last one, the thing she asked me is, go make sure you finish your degree. And I did honor her with that and went about and finished my degree after I had become a police officer.
So let me give you a hard one. We got Black Lives Matter, we got Blue Lives Matter, and you could find yourself right in between all of that. So how do you reconcile these two movements and kind of the divide that they tend to produce?
You know, I don't feel that there's anything wrong with the Black Lives Matter. They have a cause. We've had groups that have been in protest for ages, for decades. We have the NAACP, we have the ACLU, we have people who have a cause. My only concern, and I hope that we can make Black Lives Matter understand, is come to the table and have those discussions. There are protests, and I get that, but when you got the radicalization and you start burning down your community and the people who have worked so hard to build the businesses up and you burn them down in an instant, that's where I have the issue with. the thing that I want most coming from this side and from this uniform and being a black man is let's sit down and talk about what the issues are. It's not an easy conversation. It's a very difficult conversation. And on the side of law enforcement, it can't be us versus you. It has to be us doing this together. You know, we have a very, very hard job to do, and a lot of people have not been in my shoes and walked that mile in my shoes and don't realize the difficulties we have in law enforcement. Law enforcement has been told to not only go out and enforce the laws, but then we become pastors, we become social psychologists, babysitters. We have 7, 8, 10 different hats that we have to wear when that 911 call goes out. And a lot of our officers aren't trained to do that. And that's kind of where a lot of the problem comes in, is doing too much. We're asking our officers to do way too much. But the thing is, we have great officers here in Central Texas, and I have a tremendous police department. And I know coming to the table and working with us and educating us on what the issues are and letting us educate you what the issues are is what makes this a better community and makes it a strong community. It's not us versus you. It's us doing this together. Our prejudice, Pastor, is not against a person. Our prejudice is against crime, and that's the way it should be.
That's so good. So give us just a peek inside of your values for your department. So when you came in, you had a plan, and you have an acronym that you use about your values. Tell us what that is. And
so PEAK is code word for don't be long-winded. Okay, so some core values for the Round Rock Police Department is called CHIP. Everybody has a chip on their shoulder, and we realize that. You determine what that chip is and what your issue is. So what I've told my employees of the police department is take that chip and make it a positive chip. So that C in CHIP stands for community. Keep the community first. That's who we work with, is that community. That H is honor. The I is integrity, and the P is pride. You know, if you honor that community, you do your job with integrity, and don't be boastful, but go out there and be proud of putting on this uniform or stepping in and clocking in every day. Because this uniform is not a right. This uniform is a privilege. We put this badge on for a reason. When we give that oath is that we will take care of this community, and we can't forget that. And so I also tell the employees is interchange that C with Christ. And if you keep Christ first and you honor the other three values of honor, integrity, and pride, your life and your career will be very successful because God will take care of you if you make sure that he stays first and foremost in your life.
That's really good. That's really good. Appreciate that. So we've been asking you these questions, but I'm going to turn the question back out to this group. I'm going to ask you if you would be willing to pray for Chief Banks sometime during this week, to specifically, personally pray for him and his leadership role in our community. How many people would be willing to do that? Okay, so you have a specific prayer request that you typically ask people to pray for, so share that with us.
So my specific is that as you're praying for law enforcement, that includes the men and women, both sworn and civilian personnel as well, but also pray for the families of those law enforcement officers. You have wives like my wife that do not know if I'm going to come home at the end of my shift or before the or when my shift is over with, and they have to live with that. So I pray that you give them peace, that their loved one is not only out doing the right thing, but they do come home at night. So if you would do that for me, I'd appreciate it as well.
Thank you, friend. My pleasure. God bless you.
Appreciate you.
So good to know that we have people in our community that have a passion to see God honored and glorified in our community. And oftentimes we get so wrapped into our own little world that we miss out on that. And I'm hoping that this conversation breaks you out of that on numerous levels today. I want to wrap up with this. We've talked about the fallacy of race. We've talked about law enforcement and race. Now I want to talk about the gospel and race. What does the gospel say? What does it do to inform us about race? And the first thing I want you to know is that Jesus died to bring people together. Race is the antithesis of the gospel. In fact, Paul writes about it in Ephesians chapter 2. He says, "Therefore, remember that formerly you who are Gentiles by birth and called uncircumcised by those who call themselves a circumcision, that done in the body by the hands of men." In other words, remember the Gentiles who racially would be different, who experientially, culturally would be different, who religiously would be different. He says, remember that at that time you were separated from Christ, excluded from citizenship in Israel, and foreigners to the covenants of promise, without hope and without God in the world. So how would that change? He says, but now in Christ Jesus, you who once were far away have been brought near through the blood of Christ. In other words, Jesus and his blood was not simply to give you personally a ticket to heaven. It was much more than that. It was that you personally in this world, in this lifetime, would be reconciled to people who were different than you. And for a person to say, I believe in Jesus and his death for me and his forgiveness for me, and I'm going to hold racial prejudice against someone else, that is completely antithetical to why Jesus came and why he died. Let me go on here. It says, for he himself is our peace. In other words, the person of Jesus is our peace. Person of Jesus is our peace for all of us. He has made the two one and has destroyed the barrier, the dividing wall of hostility by abolishing in his flesh the law with its commandments and regulations. His purpose, this is why he did this, was to create in himself one new man out of the two, thus making peace. And in this one body to reconcile both of them to God through the cross, by which he put to death their hostility. Now watch this. He came and preached peace to you who were far away and peace to those who were near. In other words, the people that considered themselves insiders that were near the Jews and the people that considered themselves outsiders, the Gentiles, Jesus died to bring both groups together. That's why Paul writes in Galatians chapter 3, verses 28. He says, in Christ there's no distinction. There is no Jew and Gentile. There is no slave and free. There is no male and female. We are all one in Christ. It absolutely is in the heart of the gospel itself that there would be no different treatment of any other person, regardless of the differences that they might have. He says, for through him, we both have access to the Father by one Spirit. We both have access to the Father by one Spirit. How many of you, somewhere along the way, experienced some personal sibling rivalry, maybe growing up? Anybody here have some sibling rivalry? You had that, right? A lot of you did. Can you imagine your father saying, hey, listen, you kids are just both so different, you ought to hate each other. What does the father say? The father says, listen, you are brothers, you are sisters, we're one family. And that's what he's saying to you today. There's no room for racism of any kind in the heart of a Christian. No room whatsoever. Second thing I think the gospel tells us is that Jesus' death and resurrection redeems our past and secures our future. It redeems our past and secures our future. When Jesus Christ died on the cross, he died to actually take on the sins of the oppressors, those who had done the wrong thing, to take on those sins. When Jesus died on the cross, he also died to take the pain and the suffering of the oppressed. And he felt that pain and he suffered. And so both groups, the oppressed group, he brings you together with the oppressors. And together we make a new way forward. But here's the challenge. If we interpret our current experiences today through our past, In other words, our past determines how we see the present. Then we keep bringing baggage from the past into the present. We don't move forward together. So let me give you a couple examples. Real good friend of mine, Bishop Lawrence Wilkerson, grew up in New York, felt God's call to come down here and plant a church, came down, planted Agape Family of Churches. We worked together in the city. He was telling me when we started our Love Where You Live campaign, getting to know your neighbors, he said, oh, this is going to be a hard one for me. And I said, why, Lawrence? He said, well, because when we moved into Circle C and bought our house, we noticed that down the street, for sale signs started going up down the street, and we just assumed that the people here didn't want us here. And so now, all these years later, we've really never gotten to know our neighbors because we figured our neighbors didn't want to know us. What was he doing? He was looking at the history of segregation in the past and bringing it into his current situation and assuming these people don't want me, and so never felt free to go out and meet them and find out who they were and help them build bridges into his cultural experience. Now, for me, on the other side of that, if I moved into a neighborhood and there were for sale signs going up all up and down the street, I would think to myself, oh no, what did I do? This builder must have been really bad. All these other people have figured out that the homes that they bought are bad, and I just bought one of those. Why am I thinking that way? Because from my privileged background, I just assume in the world that I live in that people are going to treat me right, that I'm going to get everything to go my way, that a builder's going to make sure that my life is protected, and how dare anybody interrupt my prosperity. I'm reading it back through my historical experience. And if I bring that into my experience today, it changes the way I think. But here's what Christians need to understand. The most important thing from your past is that Jesus Christ died to pay for your sins, to bring you into a new future. So if you start interpreting your circumstances today through the cross of Jesus and his resurrection, then no matter how the people around you are treating you or what your perspective is, you have a chance to move in power and make a positive difference going forward. Because of Jesus' death and resurrection, we are not prisoners. We have the freedom to move past our past experiences and move into a powerful future, which brings me to the last one. The gospel informs us that Jesus provides power to overcome, and that power is the power of forgiveness. I want you to see a demonstration of forgiveness that visibly to the whole United States demonstrated power. Let's watch together.
Good morning to you, Paula. I have to tell you, I'm still struck by something we're seeing this morning, days after the killings here. People are still marching up with flowers in their hands and grief on their faces to pay their respects to the people who were killed here. And these are people of all ages and all colors. The police have set up a barricade to make more room for them in the street. Authorities are also telling us this morning that the 21-year-old they have in custody, who reportedly wanted to start a race war, is confessing to the murders here. At 21-year-old Dylan Roof's first court appearance, a judge decided to keep him locked up with $1 million bond.
You're charged with 9 counts of murder and 1 count of possession of a weapon during the commission of a violent crime.
While off camera, the families of the 9 people he's accused of murdering at a Bible study were speaking out with surprising compassion for Roof. He could hear their every word, the daughter of Ethel Lance speaking to him directly.
I would never talk to her ever again. I would never be able to hold her again, but I forgive you.
The mother of Tawanza Sanders shed tears as she spoke. Police say Roof meant to kill African Americans.
We welcome you Wednesday night in our Bible study with open arms. You have killed some of the most beautifulest people that I know. Every fiber in my body hurts, and I'll never be the same.
But the sister of Reverend DePayne Middleton says she's struggling.
For me, I'm a work in progress, and I acknowledge that I am very angry. But one thing DePayne has always joined in our family with is that she taught me that we are the family that love built. We have no room for hate, so we have to forgive. and I pray God on your soul.
Her cousin, also a reverend, tells us she's grieving badly.
She was my big cousin, she was my big sister, and everything she did, I wanted to do it too. We shall
A near-capacity crowd came to this college basketball arena for a vigil.
Beloved, if you will think about the nine names.
Praying for the dead Friday night.
If that young man thought he was going to divide this community or divide this country with his racial hatred, we are here today and all across America resoundingly say he miserably failed.
I've got to say that observing what these folks from Mother Emanuel Church did was a game changer in our nation. Some of you might say, I could never forgive. And I think all of the people involved would agree that they could never forgive on their own. But God can actually give you the power to forgive. And that power actually changes things. You know what? As a result of their forgiveness, what happened in the state of South Carolina? That the Confederate flag that flew in front of the state house, that wasn't put there at the time of the Civil War, it actually was put there in the 1960s in partial protest against the civil rights movement. So it really truly was a symbol against people coming together. There have been all kinds of advocacy groups trying to bring that thing down for years. And by their act of forgiveness, everybody agreed, let's bring that flag down. They changed the whole narrative of the future of a state by their response to the injustice and the incredible crime that they had experienced. And Jesus Christ is the only one that provides the power to overcome the forgiveness of the gospel. And what I would ask is, do you believe that if the 25% of the people in the United States who call themselves Bible-believing, Christ-following Christians, if each of us were to make a commitment that we would rid our world of racial stereotypes and prejudice, that we would focus on the cross and our opportunity to come together in love and care and forgiveness, do you not think that that would have a profound impact on our country? So I'm asking you to do three things. First of all, I'm asking you to let go of the politics of racism. Far too long, people in both the majority and the minority cultures have held on to the politics of this and debated their side. And I'm asking you to see the people, your neighbors, your brothers and sisters. Second thing I'm asking you to do is build a bridge that you intend to cross. A lot of people say, I don't have anything against anybody. I'm wide open. If anybody comes and they want to reach out to me, I'd be happy. I'm here for people if they... But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about you actually take the initiative, that you build a bridge. You say, well, how would I do that? Well, I would encourage you, befriend people that are different than you. Intentionally, personally, befriend them. In addition to that, host discussion groups. Have the people in your neighborhood over to your house and say, we want to talk about how we can understand who we are and how we can make this neighborhood a great place. Actually, the community policing in our city, they've asked us to do that. Like, they'll send the officers that are in those areas over to meet with the group to try to bridge that gap. You could be a person that makes a difference. Actually, build a bridge that you then cross to touch the lives of somebody else. And here's the last thing that I would ask you to do. I would ask you to honor the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus by committing to pray for reconciliation, for unity. Pray for the breakthroughs. Don't just flip through the channels and shake your head as you see things happening in our country. Get down on your knees and ask God to use His church, the Church of Jesus Christ, to show our nation a better way, starting with me. Now, I know those are big, tall orders because it's so easy just to go back and turn on your football games this afternoon and get busy with your lives. But I believe the Spirit of God is moving in you, and He's giving you something really clear for you to do this week. So I'm going to just ask you to bow your heads, and let's just take a moment in silence to just think, God, what are you telling me? What's my next step? How can I bring the good news of God's love to the people around me?